seconds. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket at will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics. Live, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
If game one is any indication of what the semifinals are going to look like in the Western Conference, buckle up. Welcome to a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. And the Utah Jazz taking care of home court advantage so far in their Western Conference semifinal matchup with the Clippers last night, a game that comes down to the wire. I've had a hard time assessing this game. Try to stay away from the hyperbole and look at one game and say, okay, this is the way this series is going to play out. I see positives and negatives for both teams. But aside from all the analysis, the only thing that matters right now is the Utah Jazz hold a 1-0 lead in this series after topping the Clippers last night, 112-109. You can look at it a million different ways. I mean, the Jazz theoretically could have been blown out in this game. They were dreadful from the field in the first half. 18 points in the first quarter. At one point in time, missed, 22, I believe, consecutive shots. Yet they found a way to get a win. Now, on the flip side, the Clippers were dreadful in the third quarter. Battled back from a 10-point deficit late in the game. Utah had it locked up. But Kawhi Leonard's good, isn't he? He gets the Clippers back into it late. Marcus Morris couldn't hit water if he fell out of a boat. He was dreadful last night. But Utah finds a way to get the win. And Donovan Mitchell, a 45-point performance. And Donovan was so efficient from the field last night. 16 of 30. I don't know if that happens regularly in this series. But again, I don't think that matters. Utah took game one. They needed a 16-for-30 performance from Donovan Mitchell. He gave it to him. It worked. They got the win. We'll talk more about this series later on in the show. I can't wait for game two. I really can't. I think this is going to be such a fun series, even if it's short. Let's say Utah wins this in 4-5, which I know is a long shot, or say the Clippers win it in 5 or 6. I don't even care if it doesn't go 7 games. Every single game in this series is going to be entertaining as can be. In fact, you want entertaining basketball, we have another one on deck tonight. The league MVP, the Joker, Jokic. He and the Nuggets will travel on the road to take on Phoenix. 7:30 start time for this game. It's the only basketball game on the slate tonight. That's it. We get one game. So all eyes will be on Denver, their MVP, and the Phoenix Suns. And of course, if you're a Jazz fan, you have interest in this. You don't want to overlook the Clippers. But either matchup, Denver or Phoenix, is going to make for just some entertaining basketball. I'm telling you, the way the Western Conference playoffs are set up, overwhelmingly more entertaining than what we saw last year. I'm serious when I say that. The Western Conference, to me, once we got out of the first round, it was pretty mundane. I mean, Clippers get ousted in the second round. You knew the Nuggets had no chance of topping the Lakers. We knew that. We knew the Rockets had no chance of topping the Lakers. It was pretty much chalk in my mind in the Western Conference last year. That's not the case this year, and it's entertaining basketball. It's fun. Last night, we saw great offense. We saw great defense. That's what the Jazz and Clippers bring to the table. I think this is one of the more fascinating playoffs that I have seen in quite some time. And last night, it's just the beginning. I think it's going to be beautiful basketball from here on out. Let's take a look at the schedules right now on the national sports scene. As I mentioned, a very short day of NBA ball with just one game, but we've had day baseball, and we've had some very good games. In fact, the Giants suffering a loss earlier today, falling to the Texas Rangers in 11 innings, 4-3. The Giants had this one going into the ninth inning, and their bullpen gives it up. It takes 11, but the Rangers get the win. The Giants still in first place in the National League West, trying to hold off the San Diego Padres, who right now are tied with the Chicago Cubs. This one in the sixth inning, Yu Darvish has delivered a gem so far against his old team. Five innings pitched, giving up just two hits and one earned run in that contest. Again, that game is in the sixth inning. And as we get to the later stages of another Bay Area contest, the Diamondbacks and the A's, 3-0 Oakland right now. Arizona, one of the worst teams, if not the worst team in Major League Baseball. 20-42, struggling once again, just two hits through seven innings. So some good day baseball, and we have plenty of other night baseball coming up. 5:05, we get the Braves and the Phillies. Also, the Dodgers and the Pirates. We'll talk about this game, one aspect of this game last night. Brian Hayes, I don't know if you're familiar with this kid or not. One of the few bright spots for the Pittsburgh Pirates. They've actually had a couple of bright spots this season, despite a 23-36 record. But Hayes is a premier rookie in this game. One of the prize prospects for the Pirates returns from an injury last night, hits a home run, and on his trot, he misses first base. Dodgers review it. He did, in fact, miss first base, and he was called out. There's the instant replay for you in Major League Baseball. You got to make sure you touch them all. So Hayes, again, prize rookie. A little bit of a blunder last night. 5:05, we get the Mets and the Orioles, plus the Rockies and the Marlins. Continuing in the 5 o'clock hour, the Astros take on the Boston Red Sox. Boston's still 37-24. As we get to that 60-game mark, I think you see the flukish tags. You throw those out the door. Every team wins 60, they lose 60. Once we get past this mark, you're going to see the cream of the crop start to separate. And I haven't necessarily taken Boston seriously up to this point in time, but over the next 3 or 4 weeks, we're going to find out just how real the Red Sox are. Nathan Eovaldi will be on the mound tonight. He's 7-2 with a 3.70 ERA. Now we get the Brewers and the Reds. The Reds have had one of the hottest players in baseball in Jesse Winker, who's just been seeing beach balls at the plate. The Brewers, top of their division right now with a record of 34-26. We get the Mariners and the Tigers, plus the Nationals and the Rays. So a packed 5 o'clock hour for baseball. Yankees Twins coming up at 6:10. Gerrit Cole had some controversial non-comments yesterday when he was asked about using a sticky foreign substance. He didn't really answer it. He didn't know how to answer it. Long pauses, silence. He followed that up with, I don't know. We'll talk about that a little bit later on in the show. In fact, next segment, we're going to bring on Bill Lasky to talk some Major League Baseball. He's a former pitcher. He's around the Giants. I want to talk to him about the foreign substances that pitchers allegedly are using and how much it could impact the game. That's coming up next segment. And we get the Blue Jays and the White Sox at 6:10. The Indians and the Cardinals tonight at 6:15. And the nightcap, it's the Angels and the Royals at 7:30. That's a look at the schedule as far as the national sports scene is concerned. As far as the national headlines, we'll talk NBA for a moment, and then we'll move over to the NFL. James Harden, Jeff Green, progressing, not going to play Game 3 against the Milwaukee Bucks. Steve Nash, head coach of the Nets, floated out the possibility that they could return for Game 4. Here's the bottom line. Harden's dealing with a hamstring strain, and I think this goes along the same lines with Mike Conley. If you are in control of your current series, there is no reason to put a guard out on the floor dealing with a hamstring issue. Brooklyn has this series in the bag at this point. They are dominating Milwaukee. The Bucks have no answer. Why would you run Harden out? And I think it's similar with Mike Conley. If the Jazz were to take Game 2, if Conley does not play tomorrow in Game 2 and the Jazz win, I think you set him Game 3. Hamstring issues are something that linger, and if you are in control, rest is the best medicine for that injury. So that's the news coming out of the NBA. As far as the NFL is concerned, a report broke earlier today that says Deshaun Watson wants to join the Denver Broncos. That's according to his ex-teammate, Kareem Jackson. He said this on a podcast. Quote, I've got a great relationship with Deshaun. I've been talking to him the last couple of weeks, and like all he's been telling me is, just tell him, like, that's where I want to be. He's like, I want to be in Denver. That's a tough quote to read. Essentially, Kareem Jackson says, yes, Deshaun Watson wants to be in Denver. And you have to believe that the Watson era in Houston, it's over with. You have to believe that. Now, Watson can't be fined for missing any spring workouts because nothing's been mandatory up to this point in time. But, you know, you just have to feel that everything that's happened, beyond the trade demands, a first-year head coach, a franchise that's going nowhere in a hurry, you have to believe that Watson's on his way out. Lawyers are still going through the discovery phase on both sides. No settlement discussions as far as all the allegations coming out of inappropriate behavior geared towards Watson. It just seems as if it's a foregone conclusion that he's done. And would it make sense in Denver? Yeah, they have Teddy Bridgewater and Drew Locke. Houston has Tyrod Taylor, Davis Mills. But I think the Broncos are much closer than, say, the Texans. It would make sense. It's a story worth monitoring. Let's break for just a moment. Local sports recap coming up when we return. Plus, we'll be joined by Bill Lasky to talk some Major League Baseball. And we'll break down Game 1 and Game 2 of the Jazz and Clippers. That's all straight ahead right here on Drive Time Sports.
Shohei, high fly ball to the corner. It goes into deep right field. Ohtani, he did it!
Swinging a high fly ball to right. It is out of here! Yastrzemski does it again, and the Giants lead 4-0.
Now, more Drive Time Sports on KOAM, 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
It is Wednesday. That, of course, means it's time for some Major League Baseball talk. I love this segment every week. I look forward to it. We bring in Bill Lasky, former big league pitcher, spent his time with the San Francisco Giants, and now an analyst for the Giants, working pregame and postgames with KNBR, the flagship station for the Giants. We'll talk about everything happening in baseball, American and National League. And Bill, as always, a pleasure to get you in. Thank you.
It's always a pleasure talking baseball with you on Wednesday. And, of course, I cover the San Francisco Giants, and they're still holding on to first place. A great game last night in Texas where they were behind. And Mike Tauchman, 6-for-66, and he hits a grand slam out of the yard. And Brandon Crawford, just outstanding shortstop, hit two home runs, and he broke a record from the 1930s, which is pretty cool, as the longest-stinted shortstop to play for the Giants. So some cool things yesterday with the Giants as they played Texas, and today they have an afternoon game there.
You mentioned Tauchman, and again, this is a guy that has spent some time with the Yankees. We saw him in Colorado, and Bill, I know we always talk about the big flashy trades. We always talk about that, and as we get closer to July, we're going to see some player movement. There are some guys in the National League, a guy like a Trevor Story, maybe a Chris Bryant, a Javi Baez. These are some of the big names that maybe floated around. They always grab the attention, but it seems like it's the smaller moves that we don't talk about too much. Little tweaks here and there to a 40-man roster that really make a big difference.
It does, and I think you're going to see more general managers not think 26-man teams, not even 40-man teams. I think they're going to go outside the box and build 50-man teams or even 60-man teams where they get some quality players, put them in AAA, keep them there, keep them in their game, and see how many moves they make. Look at how many players each day go on the IL. It seems the Giants are making a transaction every day. Today, Alex Dickerson goes down. They bring up another pitcher. They DFA Matt Whistler. They're constantly, it's a revolving door ever since Farhan's got here. And it's not just the Giants. You look at every organization, guys are going on the IL. They're bringing young players up for a couple of games and then changing it again. So the 26-man roster now isn't built like this anymore for the big leagues.
No, it's definitely not. It's changing. I think it is changing for the better because you and I have talked. I mean, you go back to the Dodger-Pirate game last night when you talk about Cabrian Hayes and the brain fart, if you will, as he didn't touch first base after hitting a home run. But again, that's a young guy, Bill, and I think looking at 40, 50, 60-man rosters, so much of that is built on these guys that are 19, 20, 21, 22 years old, where if you go back 10, 15, 20 years ago, we're not seeing a guy in the big leagues until he's 25.
I totally agree with you, and you're getting more and more teams trying that. They're getting more opportunities for the young guys to come up. Of course, it's all about money. It's all about contracts. It's all about their future. And some of the guys that are coming up, they're so enamored by the big leagues, and their eyes are wide open, and their brain between their ears aren't thinking. And they do some stupid things. They do some inexperienced things. But the whole key is they're trying to gel the young guys with the older guys. That's what the Giants have been doing. A lot of teams are doing that. Look at what Tampa Bay's doing. It's all analytics. They're pulling guys left and right, doing this, doing that. And at the same time, they're continuing to win.
Yeah, and I think when you look across both AL and NL, you're seeing a lot of player-friendly coaches, Right, I think that's a fair assessment. Outside of the Chicago White Sox, who have really tried to implement an old-school-to-the-T type coach with this new era, you look at managers front to back. I mean, these are guys that are very player-friendly. That's a fair assessment, isn't it?
Oh, totally. I agree with you. A lot of the coaches, they're not going for the older coaches anymore. I understand what you're saying about La Russa. But they kept a lot of the younger coaches with him. The communication with him is getting better. The White Sox are playing tremendous right now. They're really playing good baseball. They're starting to elevate themselves in that division. And I think what's happening is you're starting to see a lot of younger coaches with a lot of inexperience at the big league level teaching and instructing big leaguers the correct way.
Again, our guest right now, Bill Lasky, former big league pitcher for our weekly Major League Baseball segment. Bill, you being a former pitcher, I'm excited about this topic. Major League Baseball doing everything they can to crack down on pitcher-friendly foreign substances. And I don't know if you saw the interview yesterday with Gerrit Cole of the Yankees, but he really struggled to give an answer when he was asked if he had ever used a particular paste called Spider Tech while on the mound. And in the clip, he says, "I don't," and then there was this long pause, "I don't know, I don't quite know how to answer that." That's what he said, which leads me to believe, yes, you have in fact used a sticky paste called Spider Tack before. But when you look at Major League Baseball trying to crack down on the use of foreign substances, how big of a problem is it? And is it something worth monitoring? Or is this baseball just trying everything they possibly can to find a way to boost offensive numbers?
I think the biggest thing is this has been going on for so many generations. It goes back in the 50s, 60s, 70s. And I'm saying that. You look at some of the older pitchers that used to use pine tar. They used to use pine tar and rosin, any type of substance to get a better grip on the seam. And when you look at the baseballs, the leather is so shiny. They don't put the mud that much on it. The Mississippi rub, the mud they used to rub on the balls. A lot of balls are used so much, one pitch, sometimes they throw them out. So I think what the pitchers are trying to do is get a better grip on the ball. And what does that do? It makes everything go up. All the seams move faster. All the RPMs get faster. And the next thing you know, the ball's moving quicker. The fastball's generating elevation. This has been going on for a long time. I don't know the answer how they're going to stop this in the big leagues. They're not going to be able to police every pitcher that comes in every game to check their glove, their hands, their hat. They can't do that. But what they need to do is they say if they do catch you, then there's got to be a suspension. And there's got to be a suspension not just with the pitcher, but the manager and the organization, because the manager knows all this. There's no doubt every manager knows what's going on, and they need to be fined or suspended to get it stopped also.
It seems to be a bigger problem in the minor leagues. There's been four minor league pitchers suspended so far this season by Major League Baseball because of the use of substances to doctor baseballs. And when someone sits and they want to analyze the spin rate of Gerrit Cole or the spin rate of Trevor Bauer, Bill, I don't know if a trained eye can do that. I really don't. I mean, you're around the game a lot closer than I am. Is it at all possible to look at a video and say, you know what, ever since this came out, that spin rate's dropped? Is it possible to do that?
I think it's all going to be by machine, by computer, all the different analysis that they do. That's the only way they're going to find out the spin rate of those things. You see movement on the pitch from our eyes to watching the games. But that's all analysis that they have. That's all computer-driven. Those are things that's the only way they're going to catch guys to say, hey, this spin rate's a lot faster than it was last year. What's he doing differently? Because you just can't generate 2, 3, 4 miles an hour faster on your fastball, you know, at 28 to 30 years old. It's impossible. I mean, you're amping up as hard as you can to throw it. There's no way you can amp up 3 or 4 miles an hour faster. So something's got to generate that speed. And the only way you generate that speed is through RPMs and a faster spin rate. That's the only way they can generate a way to test people. Now, of course, if an umpire sees something on the ball, a sticky substance, don't forget, catchers do this too. Catchers have stuff on their shin guards. Catchers hide it too, where they can put it on the ball and give it back to them. So there's different ways they communicate back and forth. But it's not just all about the pitcher. The catcher has a lot of things to do, too, but they don't even look at the catcher. They don't look at their equipment. They don't do a lot of things with the catcher. And I'm going to tell you, there's some smart catchers out there that can hide some resin or any kind of substance on their gear and throw the ball back to the pitcher. But a lot of times the pitcher hides it pretty well. And it's really just the grip that they're looking for. And if they can catch him, they should be suspended. Why not? They need to stop it. That's the only way they're going to stop it.
Bill, when we look at everything that's happening in the game, are players truly worried about, let's say, snot, sunscreen, pine tar? Do batters really worry about that? Because I don't know that I view any of that stuff as performance enhancing. It's different than cheating and doctoring balls in my mind. I mean, sunscreen's kind of natural. Snot is natural. I say snot because I know that pitchers have done that, right, for generations and generations. So what do hitters really care about?
Well, I think they're just looking at trying to keep it even on the field. That's the whole key to that. And a lot of it, they're just thinking that the top-line pitchers, they don't need that substance. They're good enough. I think that's why they're saying, why is Bauer doing it? Why is Cole doing it? They got good enough stuff that they don't need to cheat. They don't need to add substance. But it's not just them. It's everybody. Every pitching staff is doing it. Every pitcher is trying to do it. We all did it back in the 80s when we did it. I used saliva. A lot of guys used pine tar. And then they'd use rosin just to get that little grip on the seam. I used saliva to make the ball slide a little bit more. It wasn't that, you know, it wasn't I'm thinking, okay, I'm cheating. No, I was just trying to make the ball move a little bit more. Sure, in hindsight, yeah, it is cheating because I am using a substance. Saliva, is that a substance? Could be. I don't know. Didn't really get me out of any games. It made the ball move a little bit more. But I understand what they're saying about suntan lotions and things like that to make it sticky. And when you get it sticky, you can really get a good grip on a curveball or slider, and that's what they're looking at. It's a big issue they're going to deal with, and it's going to go right into these negotiations this winter when players and owners are going to sit down and start talking about some of the changes they need and what's going to occur moving forward.
Bill, we could talk about this all day. Here we are, 10, 11, 12 minutes already into it. We haven't even talked about what's happening in the big leagues because, to me, this is just a fascinating story. So when you look at the AL and the NL, you mentioned the Giants still in first place in the National League West, and it's a comfortable margin right now. 2.5 up on the Padres, 3 up on the Dodgers. The Central, I think, has really taken a fun turn. Milwaukee, a half game up on the Cubs. Cardinals, 3.5 back. They've struggled over the last 10 games. All in all, in the National League, is it still the Giants is the biggest surprise now that we're near 60 games into the season?
Oh, no doubt about it. There's no way. I mean, teams, the analysts were saying 75 to 78 wins at the beginning of the year. Fourth place, they were even saying Arizona was going to be ahead of them. I mean, you can't analyze teams when you got gut. And these guys are all playing with their gut. They're playing team baseball, and I always say it's T-E-A-M. There's no one guy that's just taken off. Sure, Buster Posey's having a great year. Brandon Crawford's having a great year. Belt was on the IL. He just comes back. There are different players on this team that are making good, positive motions, and that's what's happening with the Giants. They're playing as a team. Their pitching staff, Gausman, has just been electric. Totally. If it wasn't for DeGrom, everybody would be talking about Gausman. But he's kind of been under the radar. He's 7-0 with a 1.2 in run average. Nobody's even talking about him. So there are guys that are hiding. There are the bullpen still dealing what they're doing. There's not really one closer. You got Rogers and Jake McGee flip-flopping. But this team is playing team baseball, and that's what I like watching it because there's a different star every day instead of the Padres and the Dodgers who are still trying to get their identification on who's going to be their key players, who is going to be their best pitchers. They have an IL just as long as the Padres and the Giants, but they're competing. When you look at the top three teams in the NL West, you can't say those three teams are mediocre because all three of them are playing really well. And if you remember, yesterday was the 60th game they played. And last year, that was their season. So this from now on is going to be all extra work. And now how each team is going to identify their players, what they need as they get into July in the trade big time.
Yeah, I like how you brought up Gausman. And it's so funny to me. If you play fantasy baseball or you're a diehard fan, you'll start to find little gems, players that have exceeded what their team's output looks like. Gausman has just been dynamic. I told you about a month and a half ago, hey, he's not Jacob DeGrom. Jacob DeGrom is putting together one of the most dominating seasons that we have seen probably over the last 40, 50 years. But Gausman deserves to be in the running for the Cy Young 60 games into the season.
Oh, no doubt about it, but nobody wants to talk about him. DeGrom is just having a fascinating season. You can't deny him that. but he's in the New York market. So what's the media going to do? They're going to blow up DeGrom. We're in San Francisco. San Francisco's not L.A. But if you start looking at all the top leaders in every category in pitching, Gausman's in every one of them. So you know what? We're just going to see how he continues to move in June, and most likely he'll be on that all-star pitching roster. Who's going to start the game? We'll find out. It's either going to be DeGrom or Gausman. Gausman's from Colorado. It'd be great for him to see him start that game in his home state.
Yeah, I'll give you another pitcher that has been really good this year, but you never hear about him because he plays for the Pirates, Richard Rodriguez. I was going over statistics. Here's a closer for the Pirates. Yeah, he's only got 7 saves. Doesn't have a ton of opportunities because he plays in Pittsburgh. He's got a 1.8 ERA and a 0.7 whip so far this year. You find players like this, Bill, that, again, they're the smaller name players that may get moved come the deadline. And when I look at Rodriguez, he fits that bill.
You're absolutely right. I got to see him a lot because the Giants have played Pittsburgh, and he was a guy that was on waivers, and the Pirates picked him up. And sure enough, he's become a superstar at the end of the bullpen and one of the best savers. So, you know, my biggest thing with him is, can he continue to do this? Because he's having an outstanding year, no doubt. But when you look at the past of his numbers, they weren't this solid. So, again, here's a guy that you could take a chance on, but you are taking a chance to give up some kind of your prospects and things for a guy that could be that same guy, but maybe in a different uniform, he goes back to how he was.
Bill Lasky, again, our guest right now. Bill, it's always a pleasure to get you on. Again, before I let you go, we got to talk about the work that you do at KMBR, some of the guests that you have had on, and of course, all the pregame and postgame work that you do for the Giants.
Yeah, it's all on KMBR, the sports leader out here in San Francisco, 680 AM, 104.5 FM. You can stream the pre- and post-games on Saturday and Sunday. Just having fun doing it, and it's always great when you got a winning team to talk about and bringing guests on and talking about how they got to the big leagues, how they're advancing through the big leagues, and just more of a storyline on these guys, and that's what I love doing, and really good storylines on a lot of top players.
Bill, thanks again for the time. Look forward to talking again next week. It's always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure, too. And I hope your fans continue to listen to us because I love talking baseball with you, my friend.
It's always a great time. Thanks again, Bill. Let's pause for just a moment. We do have more Drive Time Sports coming up when we return. We're right here on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
This is Derek Favors, number 15 from the Utah Jazz. You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
3-point game, Harris. Pick and roll, Favors takes it strong and one. Oh my, watch Derek Favors take a leap right here.
We get an off night tonight for the Jazz, but they return tomorrow. Short order as they play game 2 at Vivint Smart Home Arena against the Clippers. How great was it to watch that game last night? I wasn't there. I was at home, but I got to watch it on TV and see a full crowd at Vivint. That place was so loud. There's no question it was the loudest an NBA arena has been the last 2-3 seasons, hands down. I mean, Utah already has one of the greatest home court advantages in NBA history, going back to the Delta Center. For various reasons, that place is loud, it's rowdy, and that was the case last night. A tremendous home court advantage. And I think game 2 is just as equally important for the Jazz to win. You got to make sure you keep that home court, because I do believe the Jazz can win a game at Staples, but forcing the Clippers to have to beat you at home in games 5 or 7, that's a strong advantage in the series. I think tomorrow night's game, it's monumental. It's monumental. But going over the notes I had from game 1 last night, it's hard to assess. You know, you don't ever want to overreact in one game. And that was my thought after game 1 against Memphis. I knew Utah would win that series in 5. Yes, Memphis made it difficult for them at times, but the talent on the court, it was so overwhelmingly obvious that the Jazz were better than the Grizzlies. And I didn't get that sense last night either which way. There's multiple ways you can look at a game. And I know that today the Los Angeles media, the national media, says the Clippers have nothing to worry about with the way that game went down last night. And that's a fair assessment. It's a fair assessment. I can't argue with it. Because even though Utah went about 8 minutes without a field goal, missed 20 straight shots, they still shot 40% from the field. They still shot 34% from the three-point line. And they managed to out-rebound the Clippers. So I can see where Los Angeles or national media would say, look, the Clippers have nothing to worry about. But if you look at it from that perspective, you have to flip it and look at the other direction. Utah won this game last night without Mike Conley. That is an all-star point guard. Remember, this team has three all-stars on it, and they got the job done against the Clippers last night without him. And I have said time and time again, with the way this Jazz offense, how fluid it is. They move so crisp. They get open looks. We saw what Conley did against the Grizzlies. He is so important to this team. And I worry about the hamstring injury. I really do. So if you're Utah, you just got to find ways to win games until you know you're going to get consistent minutes from Conley. I don't care about the analysis at this point. I think it may take game two, maybe even game three, for us to sit down and look at this game and have a realistic point of view on which direction it's heading. But you can't do it off of game one. Don't do it after game one. Because like I said, last night was a really special performance from Donovan Mitchell. It was. He was incredible last night. And the stat was thrown out. He tied Karl Malone for the most 40-point playoff games in Jazz history. He's only played in 28. But aside from that, the game's changed. So throw that stat out. But I do believe it speaks volumes to how important he has been to this Jazz team in the playoffs. And I don't expect Donovan to shoot 16 of 30. I think it's unreasonable to expect him to do that five or six times in this series against a team with perimeter defenders like Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. Donovan found ways to get to the basket last night, and that's where he was most effective, especially late in the game. I didn't feel like the Clippers had any sort of answer for him as he's taking the ball off the wing. 6 of 15 from downtown, you'll live with that if you're the Clippers. But it's what Donovan did inside, going 10 of 15 inside the three-point line. That's where the problems come from the Clippers defensively. So again, it's not a seven-game set that we have to talk about. It's each individual beast at this point in time. And last night, Donovan was on another level. After the game, he says, they just have to win by any means necessary. Here's Donovan last night following the victory.
We all know what Rudy's going to do, but like you said, Joe coming out there doing what he does as well. And I think that's really where it is and what's going to help us win these games is we got to do it by any means necessary, whether it's diving on the floor or whatever we got to do. We got to do it hard and we got to do it with pace and execute. And if you make a mistake, make an aggressive one. You know, don't be kind of complacent and lax in what you're in your movements. And I think that's what you saw from us in the second half.
You know who else was really good last night for the Jazz was Bogdanovich. He had a three-point shot, top of the key, put the Jazz up by 10. And when he hit that, you could just feel that arena erupt on TV. And I thought it was a dagger. Turned out to be a difference maker as the Jazz won by 3. But I thought it was a dagger. I thought that was it for the Clippers. So I tip my hat to LA for getting back in the game. But all day yesterday, I talked about the Clippers playing small ball. And that being probably the most efficient way to counter Gobert. And so what does Rudy do last night? Like blocks a three-point shot to close out the game. I mean, the guy is very, very good defensively. I'm not telling you nothing you don't already know. I still believe it's the Clippers' best interest to play small ball. And look at the starting lineup last night. Paul George, Reggie Jackson in the backcourt. Jackson only played 17 minutes of this game, but still. Jackson and George in the backcourt. Leonard and Morris and Nicholas Batum. That's small ball. Zubac comes off the bench, still plays 20 minutes last night. Plus minus was minus one, had 6 boards, couple of assists, had 3 blocks. He wasn't bad last night, but I almost feel as if the Clippers are going to have to use DeMarcus Cousins in a broader sense than, say, a Zubac in this series. And Tyronn Lue said after last night, he expects DeMarcus Cousins to get more time. He only played 4 minutes last night, but he had 6 points, spread the floor, knocked down a 3-point shot. So I would expect to see DeMarcus Cousins as well. It makes Utah uncomfortable defensively when you play small ball. And the Jazz found a way to overcome that last night, but I still believe it's the Clippers' best chance of winning the series. Rudy Gobert said last night that he's comfortable in any set. It doesn't matter to him. I don't know that I necessarily believe that. He has to answer that question this way, but that's what he said.
teams have been trying to do this to us for years now. You know, I think I'm comfortable guarding any lineup. You know, it's you know, whether I get close out the three-point shooters and then make a play, or you know, still protect the paint at the same time, I've been doing it. And yes, it's different than just, you know, guarding a traditional big like Valanciunas or Zubac, but you know, I've been doing both. You know, and you might see a clip of me dancing on the perimeter once in a while, but the truth and the numbers back it up. You know, that I'm comfortable guarding, you know, any lineup. And you know, it's their game plan. You know, they're gonna try to make me uncomfortable, and I respect that. But you know, I'm gonna be out there on the court, so you know, I'm comfortable.
You know what I think was the most unusual stat for me in this game last night? Fast break points. You know what the total was here? The Clippers had 4. The Jazz had 2. Not a lot of running in this series. And I would expect more fast break points based on a total of 92 three-point shots being taken last night. 92. Clippers shoot 38%, Jazz shoot 34%. 92 three-point shots. You would think a lot of long misses could lead to some points in transition. 4 for the Clippers, 2 for the Jazz, that's it. Points in the paint. Utah scores 112 for the game. They have 36 in the paint. Clippers 109 for the game. They have 28 in the paint. But this is going to be a fun series. I'm telling you, it's going to be a fun series. So keep the analysis on the low. At least I'm going to at this point, because I really don't know what to make of this series as of yet. I thought both teams took care of the basketball well last night as well. There was only 9 turnovers for the Clippers, 7 for the Jazz. The numbers say that Utah should have won this game being at home. That's what the numbers would tell you. So I think what happened in this game should have happened. Kawhi Leonard said the Clippers blew this last night. I don't believe they blew it. They were flat in the third quarter. Utah took advantage. They scored 65 in the second half. But the final numbers would tell you Utah, the home team, they're too similar. So you favor the home team. Utah managed to limit the transition points for the Clippers. They managed to limit their turnovers. Defensively, it was difficult for both teams, 6 blocks apiece. It's just hard to bring an analysis of the series. I can say, well, Utah was fortunate to win this game because, and then I can look at the Clippers and say the same thing. But one aspect that I guess we just have to grow to accept, if we haven't already, Paul George did not play well last night. He had 10 rebounds. He had 20 points. He was 4 of 17 from the field. 4 of 17, 3 of 8 from deep. Hit a 3-point shot late in the game. Cut it to 3 points, if I remember correctly. George hit that straightaway 3. And Marcus Morris was horrible from the field as well. He was 1 of 9 from downtown, 4 of 14 from the field. I don't expect Morris to shoot like that throughout the series. I wouldn't expect Paul George to shoot like that through the series. But he's done it before. He's made a bad name for himself in the postseason because of it. Game 2 tomorrow night. I think it gives us a little bit more insight as to what direction this series goes and gives us some more X's and O's to break down. I just don't think you can responsibly do that. National media loves their hot takes. I look at last night's game. I really don't know what to make of it. I really don't. Pros and cons both ways. Let's break one more time. We'll come back and wrap up this edition of Drive Time Sports when we return on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Now, more Drive Time Sports on KOAL, 107.3 FM and 750 AM, the play-by-play home of the Emory Spartans.
One more note on last night's Game 1 before we wrap this show up. I'm going to talk about the final 15 seconds of that game for the Clippers. I'll bring in Travis Anderson to close out this show. Travis, the Clippers have 1 timeout left. They don't get a shot off to tie this game last night with the Jazz.
That can't happen. You have to get at least an attempt at the basket. They don't. That's just a mistake on the Clippers' part. You got to call timeout once the ball advances into the half court.
I'm okay with not calling a timeout. Utah's too good defensively. So I'm okay with not giving Quinn Snyder and the Jazz an opportunity to get set, talk some situations over. I'm fine with that. But once you hit the 6-7 second mark, you've eaten up close to 10 seconds, and you were nowhere near getting a decent shot off. You have to call timeout if you're the Clippers.
Yeah, call it, and then go over a play and at least get Kawhi Leonard an attempt, because in that situation, the only person taking a shot to tie the game should be Kawhi Leonard.
And Luke Kennard was on fire last night, too.
He was good, but Ingles did a good job of blowing that play up. He blew up that screen, came over the top. So you got to credit Joe Ingles and then Rudy Gobert.
Yeah. Again, for all the talk of spreading the floor, getting Gobert outside of the paint, it was a beautiful adjustment last night.
They survived.
That's all you got to do.
That's all you got to do, yeah.
That's all you got to do. You have to survive. Tonight's game two, big one, Nuggets, Suns. And again, like I said earlier in the show today, if you're a Jazz fan, you have to have interest in this. Who would you rather play? I mean, we got to see the Nuggets throughout their first round series. They have the MVP and Jokic. I think that is a bad matchup for Gobert. You look at Phoenix, they ousted the defending champ Lakers. Devin Booker and Donovan Mitchell could put together just a brilliant offensive series. Who are you rooting for if you're a Jazz fan?
Probably the Nuggets, because I think Phoenix gives Utah a lot of issues. And we've seen that in the regular season. They beat them, what, 3-0, 3-0? Yeah, Phoenix is a bad matchup for the Jazz. They should probably root for Denver.
Maybe I've said this now for months. The Nuggets without Jamal Murray have no chance. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. I've had people tell me, you still think that because they're playing good basketball? Yeah, they beat the Blazers. That's who they beat. They beat the Blazers.
And Portland plays no defense. They have one guy you really can, you know, hone in on. Nobody ever takes Portland seriously. And for Denver, I think for Utah, they can put Gobert on him. They can come double. Then who's going to beat you? They don't have anybody that really scares you outside of the Joker. So root for the Nuggets if you're a Jazz
fan. I'm with you. It's got to be Denver. If you're a Jazz fan, root for the Nuggets. Jokic getting the MVP, first center since 2000. That was Shaq. That was the last time a center won the MVP. Because Tim Duncan is not a center. He's a power forward.
Okay, so
Shaq was the last center to get it. Jokic, 26.4 points per game, 10 boards, 8 assists. You okay with him winning MVP this season?
Yeah, he was the MVP. No problem with it. Embiid was probably number two.
If he stays healthy...
Embiid's the winner.
If he stays healthy, LeBron's probably the winner.
And LeBron should have probably won it last year. I mean, what LeBron did last season, he should have won it. He didn't. This year, up to the point where LeBron got hurt, he was probably the favorite.
He probably was. I believe Jokic deserves it. Just based off injuries alone, I don't think you can debate it. I don't think there's a conversation to be had here. Jokic, the MVP. You can watch him tonight against the Suns. Start time for that game set for 7:30. It's going to do it for us here on this edition of Drive Time Sports. We'll be back to do it again tomorrow. He's Travis Anderson. I'm Jordan Buscarini. Be safe. We are out.